Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. On April 5th, City of Tulsa voters will go to the polls to vote on Vision Tulsa, an $884 million sales tax proposal that will replace the county's Vision 2025 sales tax that expires in 2017. The proposal has gone through a number of iterations, competing interests, and rounds of citizen feedback to arrive at three ballot items: a public safety proposal for $272 million to add over 150 police officers and over 50 new firemen, $102 million for streets and transit, which will include the money to operate two rapid bus transit lines and improve the time between buses around the city, along with 26 economic projects ranging from Arkansas River infrastructure to rehab Zinc Dam and build a new low-water dam in South Tulsa, the expansion of Gilcrease Museum to partnerships with city school districts to attract and retain teachers, and developing a business park and infrastructure in North Tulsa. Along with 22 other projects, those projects will cost just over $510 million. My guests today are two City of Tulsa counselors to talk about Vision Tulsa, Counselor G.T. Bynum from District 9 and Counselor Karen Gilbert from District 5. Counselors Gilbert and Bynum, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Vision Tulsa, as it's now called in its renewal phase, has been a very public process in which, over the course of a couple of years, counselors, task force have been looking at a variety of issues. And I guess my first question is, given the public nature of the discussions and how things have changed and morphed, everything from, you know, would it be a county, would it be a city initiative, do you both feel that you have the very best package to go before voters here in April?
I really do. I mean, we have had public meetings since the get-go. We've had three task force going. The longest one is the River Task Force that Councillor Bynum chaired. And then we also had the Public Safety Task Force, which I chaired. And then our Economic Development Package side of it, which was led by Councillor Ewing. And had numerous task force meetings. Along with the task force meetings, we all went out, did several town hall meetings, took public input from all of those meetings, and even brought those discussions back to the table to make our final decisions.
And I would say, yeah, if you look at the difference in the way proposals like this were put together under the city commission form of government versus the council form of government, we have a much higher rate of success at getting them passed by the voters under the council form of government. And the council form of government, mind you, has plenty of drawbacks, which we're all very aware of. But this is one area where it actually works very well because you have different representatives of different parts of the city with different backgrounds, different life experiences, and frankly, different priorities. And so to put something like this together and find that consensus across the community that represents the best agreement that all parts of town could come to, I'm very pleased with. We had all nine city councilors vote in favor of this, and I think that shows the type of broad collaboration Councilor Gilbert was talking about. And you don't do that overnight. It required years of study, years of town hall meetings to get to that point. But this represents the consensus of the whole city. And that doesn't mean that, you know, if you were to leave it to one part of town, that this is exactly what they would come up with. But it does represent the consensus of the whole city.
Now, when the first vision passed, there were large gatherings of individuals offering feedback on the proposals. I think the proposals didn't change all that much from some of the failed vision to the past vision. But there was this feeling that there was a lot of public feedback. Now, I know you've had a lot of meetings, but they've been smaller meetings. Do you feel like you have a good sense of where citizen feedback is on the proposals?
I would say I don't think there's ever been a proposal put forward in Tulsa that had more public participation in it than this one. Now, we may not have done a few giant events at the convention center. Instead, we did 10 or 15 smaller scale events in all parts of the city that made it more accessible to people by having it near their homes, near where they worked. And that was a priority that we set out 2 years ago to have, is that we want this to be completely transparent so all the meetings are available online. We want all the information that we are going to use accessible to the public. And then we want to involve our fellow Tulsans in this as much as they want to be involved. And I'll be honest, I mean, towards the end of it, I think our attendance tapered off a bit because people were sick of talking about it. But we did have a tremendous amount of public participation in putting this together.
How much did the final proposals change from that citizen feedback? I know in the case of the river, it changed greatly.
It did. I mean, I can speak in particular on the river, and I know Councillor Gilbert can talk about public safety. But on the river, we were a year and a half ago, we had four dams in a proposal and a $300 million or $299 million proposal. And today we have the two lakes in Tulsa. And we've added in a focus on Turkey Mountain, added in parks and trails and redevelopment, and have that at half the cost that we were originally talking about. So it changed dramatically based on that public feedback, which is so helpful because when you have the same group of people kind of looking at the same problem together in a room for years, it's nice to go out and have the citizens kind of pull your head up out of the weeds and get you to look at it from a more global perspective.
What about the public safety initiative? How much did it change over the time?
It changed a little bit. We started out with 175 police officers to where now we're down to 160 in this package, and with firefighters down to 65 firefighters where before we were above 100. So as Councillor Bynum said, just going out and listening to the public and hearing exactly what they wanted included in this package. They wanted, you know, economic development pieces. And in order to make everything fit together and not have this package extend, you know, 20 years, we had to trim it back a little bit. And unfortunately, you know, that was one of the pieces that we had to trim back on.
Let's talk a little bit about the public safety initiative, because this is a little different than what we've seen in previous visions. Not only is it a city proposal, but this would be a permanent tax, correct?
Yes, this will be a permanent tax.
And is this what we can expect down the road with the city, where we're going to be taking essential parts of the city government and sort of dedicating taxes to covering the cost of say, public safety? You have a transit part that will also be permanent, too. Do you see this as something that's going to continue, or is this a one-time deal?
I can't say it's a one-time deal. And right now, unfortunately, we've seen our numbers in our police and fire department decline to a level to where we're at a critical shortage. And so in order to get everybody on the same page, which is very, very important when you put something together like this, you know, you have to look at both sides. Do we go for a tax increase, or can we use this package, which is sales tax, and reallocate some of those funds to take care of our necessities within the city of Tulsa? And public safety is one of those necessities that we provide to the citizens of Tulsa. So, you know, again, I can't say that it's going to be something that we're going to keep looking at of using different capital improvement packages to use for these essential needs.
In operations, really.
In operations, mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, right now, this is something that we can use in order to help us out in the meantime, you know, until we can do more investigations, more studies to see what else is needed within other departments and especially our public safety.
Now, those 160 police officers, what sort of difference will it make? What will the citizens see for those 160 officers?
So within those 160 police officers, we're going to be able to get back to community policing. We're going to be able to have more patrol officers out there patrolling neighborhoods, actually driving through neighborhoods and getting to meet the public, getting to meet the residents. Right now, our officers that we have on duty right now are going from call to call to call to call. They don't have time to just drive through a neighborhood casually, you know, getting to know the residents. I get it almost every single day on my Facebook pages of my neighborhoods in my district that, you know, they're always posting on Nextdoor or Facebook saying, you know, a police officer just drove through our neighborhood. Anybody know what's up? So wouldn't it be nice to just actually have a police officer drive through without anything being up? You know, just having that extra security. So another way that this is going to help us out is keeping our police stations open 24/7. Right now, our police stations, our three divisions, are only open from 7 a.m. until 4 p.m. So if someone is being chased after 4 p.m. and they're looking for a safe place, unfortunately, they cannot go to a police station.
You mentioned community policing. Is this a philosophy that the police wants to reestablish in the community?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. our officers would love to be able to just get out and talk to residents, get to know the residents and get to know the area that they patrol rather than just going from call to call to call. So, I mean, it's a great way to for them to get out and know the community that they protect.
And Rich, I can speak to this. I've seen the impact of this in my own district. I represent the 61st and Peoria area where just a few years ago we had a quadruple homicide and there was great frustration by the police because they couldn't get any of the people that might have seen what happened or knew what happened to actually talk with them about it. And the issue that we ran into there was you had a group of folks. And most Tulsans are this way, by the way, not just people who live at 61st and Peoria. Most Tulsans, if they have an encounter with a police officer, it's in a confrontational situation. It's they're getting pulled over because they were speeding or they might be out of line and doing something. They don't get the opportunity to interact with police officers in a positive way. And so our colleague, Counselor Jeannie Q, did a fantastic job of organizing block parties and neighborhood meetings and things like that that on the surface sound like fluff. But what it did was it allowed the residents of those apartment complexes to get to know police officers in a non-confrontational setting, get to know them as people. And because of that, they started talking with police officers, sharing information with them, and crime in that area is down year over year 40%. That's the kind of impact that can make when a police officer has the ability to focus on getting to know a neighborhood instead of just driving from one call to another.
My guests today are Counselor G.T. Bynum and Counselor Karen Gilbert from District 5 and District 9, respectively. And they are two of the counselors that voted for the vision package that will go before Tulsa voters on April 5th, an $884 million sales tax proposal that replaces the original Vision 2025 proposal. And of that, there'll be three questions. One for public safety, which will total up about $272 million for police and fire officers. The second part is for streets and transit. This was an addition that also came in sort of late in the process, this idea of dedicating money for transit as well as street operations in this package. How did that come about?
We had a task force that was led by former Mayor Roger Randall and former City Councilor Susan Neal that spent over a year studying this, and they brought their proposal to us probably 3 or 4 months ago, but it was in time for us to be able to incorporate it into it. And the focus is on turning our transit system in Tulsa away from being basically a vehicle of last resort. If you can't afford a car or you are not able to drive, you have to take the bus, and reorienting it into something that is a mode of transit of choice. And so it would fund the operations of two bus rapid transit lines, which are basically like subways, but with buses. They arrive on a routine basis, one going down Peoria, one going out, I believe, 11th.
11th right? Street, right?
Yeah, so great for TU there. But those would arrive every 10 to 15 minutes on a routine schedule, and people could utilize them better. The other component of this that I think is so important, though, is also street maintenance. Our philosophy, the philosophy at the City of Tulsa for a couple decades now, has been to spend, you know, millions of dollars replacing streets, and then just you replace them again when they wear out. And we can save a ton of money over time if we just properly maintain them. So if there's a crack in a street, you go out and you fill it in.
Before it becomes a pothole.
Before it becomes a pothole. Not the guys that go out and fill the potholes in with asphalt. That is not maintenance. That's lawsuit mitigation. but what we want to do is be proactive. And so this would also fund crews to do that type of work.
Since this is a separate proposal, I think some people may say, I'm never going to use transit, so why should I vote for this? But I really look at transit as this is like the next step for the city. When you talk about a city moving up, when you go to the next tier of cities that are larger than Tulsa, they all have decent transit, if not excellent transit. And our transit is not either.
No, ours is not, unfortunately. You know, the last couple of years, we visited other cities that have been a few years ago in somewhat of the same situation Tulsa is right now, you know, wanting to improve, and transportation is one of their biggest areas that they've really strived on and have really made some improvements. And that's one that, you know, that we've heard throughout the whole process also. You know, in the task force that Councillor Bynum was referring to was all about, it was citizen-led. Mm-hmm. Not a single one of us elected officials served on that task force. So it was all about the citizens. And they did a phenomenal job meeting, discussing, researching, and putting together a plan to bring to us. And I see it almost every single day working in our schools. When we have a child that is sick and we call the parents, ask them to come pick them up because they're not, you know, feeling too hot. And well, they are hot because they're running a fever, but but, you know, they can't sit in the classroom. So because they're not well. And when we call the parents and ask them to come pick them up, unfortunately, there are some parents out there that don't have a car for their transportation mode to come pick up the student. So they do rely on our city transportation, and it takes them longer right now, takes them a good couple hours to catch a bus and to get to school to pick up their sick child, and then that sick child having to get back on the bus and ride home. So
it'd take an hour to get home probably.
Right. Well, a little bit longer than that even. Yeah. So,
and I would say another big consideration on the transit side that was in my mind was that if you look at our demographics in Tulsa, our population is aging. You're going to have every year more and more Tulsans that, for whatever reason, can't drive anymore. And what you don't want them to do is then become isolated either in their home or wherever else. You want them to be able to get around. And that was a, you know, that I think that's a population that we often overlook, but is important to keep in mind.
I want to ask you one other question about that, and that is the fact that with these bus rapid transit lines, there'll be the demonstration lines. And I know that when you do the same sort of thing with light rail, all of a sudden people, once the light rail's up and running, they actually see, wow, these stations become a boon for economic development. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to be located near these stops. Do you anticipate the same sort of reaction for bus rapid transit?
Absolutely.
Say, on Peoria,
yeah, no, we
across
do.
11th Street?
We do, and you see that in other cities where it exists, but I think your point is exactly right. We view this very much as an opportunity to change the way Tulsans think about public transit by turning it into a mode of transit of choice. As it so happens, I mean, we located the Peoria bus rapid transit line because one in six Tulsans lives within a mile of Peoria, a mile of that corridor. So it's something they can easily access. But we absolutely think that the places where these stations are going to become areas of choice for folks that want to be able to use that transit line. And it will all feed into downtown Tulsa, where you have a lot of workforce that needs to be able to get that may not necessarily have a vehicle in the first place.
Now, this will allow us to transition into the economic development. Really, that was the key for the proposals that were approved, that this is going to create some economic development. Do you feel good about where this process is as far as the projects that made the cut?
I love it. And I love it because I feel like, in particular, the two ones that we've talked about so far have been very much about the city of Tulsa fulfilling its core responsibilities. This economic development component, though, really carries forward the spirit of Vision 2025 originally, which was about forming partnerships within the community to do what's best for the community, not about one entity just doing what's best for them to the exclusion of others. And so, you know, in Vision 2025, it was very much about it being a county program that had tremendous benefits for the city. This time around, what you see riddled throughout that economic development list of projects are partnerships, whether it's partnerships with Tulsa County on the fairgrounds, partnerships with the University of Tulsa on Gilcrease, partnerships with the U.S. Department of Defense on the Air National Guard facility. I can go on and on and on. Partnerships with our local schools to improve their recruitment opportunities and the safety of kids that go to and from those schools. Throughout that, it is really an opportunity for the city of Tulsa to partner with other governmental entities and private entities as well, nonprofit entities, to help provide a tremendous impact for the community.
I want to talk about one project that sort of goes in line with the public transit piece, which is the GO plan. There'll be priority projects along that 11th Street corridor. And I know proponents see this as a model for what our streets are going to look like down the road with large pedestrian sidewalks, probably dedicated bike lanes. Councilor Gilbert, will you be looking at this to see is this going to be a viable model for expanding throughout the rest of the city?
You know, I certainly hope so. You know, in my district, I have a lot of pedestrian traffic, And my constituents rely on our sidewalks. So
I don't know District 5, the boundaries as well, but is that a heavily sidewalked part of the city?
It is, but unfortunately, it's aging infrastructure. So I run on sidewalks every single morning, and I'm always seeing the divots, the cracks. You know, I keep playing in my head over and over again, what if I was in a wheelchair and I hit this divot in a sidewalk? How would I get out of it? How can I go around it? So it is something that, you know, it's a good start. And that's how I feel that all of this whole plan is all about, is changing our city. We're improving on our public safety. We're hopefully we're going to get water in that river. And, you know, and changing our transportation system. So we are on the cusp of moving our city in a direction that we really haven't been able to get there. I'm very excited about it.
We mentioned the river. Let's talk a little bit about the river, Councilor Bynum. You mentioned that you're down to two dams, but these will be, how long will the impoundments be? Will this fully cover the cost of reconstructing Zinc and then constructing a new low water dam, what, around 98th or
99th? 103rd. Yes. Yeah. No, it does. You know, probably the difference between this and the earlier iteration is that the earlier iteration was just put in four dams and we'll wait and figure out how to take care of everything else after that. And quickly realized the citizens did not want that approach. You've had basically two generations go by here in Tulsa without being able to utilize the river as a recreational resource or a destination. And so it was very important that we have more of a all-encompassing proposal for each lake. So the two lakes that would be created, the first one is replacement of the Zinc Dam that's at 29th and Riverside, but raising it 3 feet. So you would have a 10-foot deep lake there extending up past downtown Tulsa. That dam would have gates running all the way across instead of the way it is right now where it's like two gates on one side, one gate on the other, and a concrete wall in the middle. So it will not silt in like the one that's there now has. It will also be safer from a flood control standpoint and just a user safety standpoint. The other lake that would be created would start at 103rd and Riverside Drive. That's where the dam would be. And it would go up to the 71st Street Bridge there where you can drive over from the east side over to the Tulsa Hills area. Mm-hmm. Both of these lakes will have marinas on them. Both lakes will be 8 to 10 feet in depth. So you'll be able to use watercraft on them. You'll be able to swim in them. And they will have parks and trails on both sides. Another element that we added in was improvement of Turkey Mountain in between these two lakes. So there's land acquisition funding in that, and then also trail and outdoor recreational area improvements in that.
And I would assume combined with the Kaiser Family Foundation investment, this is going to really transform Turkey Mountain.
Yes, we decided, you know, if we're going to be serious about Turkey Mountain being an urban wilderness, then we ought to invest in it that way. And you see that the turnout, the usage that that place has, even just from when I was growing up here in Tulsa versus today, it is tremendous. The parking lot there on a nice weekend is full. And so we think it's a real opportunity as Tulsa continues to grow to have that type of location here in the middle of the city.
I want to talk about one part of the original Vision 2025 that gets overlooked, and I think it really made a difference that most people don't even think about, and that is the beautification of downtown, all the signage, all the changes in sidewalks. It's a really minor step, but I think it created a better climate for people to invest in downtown. And I know there's one area of beautification along Route 66 that's a part of this project. Do you see that the same way, and do you think it'll have the same effect on Route 66?
Oh, I think it did have an impact, and there is funded within this sort of a beautification and Route 66 investment fund to allow future generations of Tulsans to be able to allocate, as opportunities come up, allocate funds to capitalize on those opportunities. Your question goes back to the root question about all of this, which is, why do it? Are we just doing it because it's fun to do it and it sure would be nice? And the reality is no. If you look at any major city in America in the last 50 years, they've seen their populations migrate to the suburbs because that's where the cheap undeveloped land was. Those cities that have reversed that trend have had to find ways to incentivize people to come back in and invest in the core part of the city again. And the best way to do that, and the way that we've already proven you can do that in Tulsa, is by some sort of public investment that creates a draw in the core part of the city. You've seen that in Tulsa in the last 15 years. Building the BOK Center was the impetus that led to over $900 million in investment in downtown Tulsa since the BOK Center was opened. And any of the developers that you talk to in the downtown area will tell you that is what triggered all of the things that have happened since then in downtown. We see very similar opportunities, not just with downtown development. We see it with the river. We see it in North Tulsa in particular. Councilor Henderson, I think, did a fantastic job of including in this and convincing us of the need to include funding in North Tulsa for industrial site clearance.
The Peoria Mohawk Business Park?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of different areas in this where you will see basically the laying of the groundwork through some sort of public investment that will then lead to much greater private investment down the road.
And so specifically to, say, the Route 66 area, do you expect that sort of investment to follow the public investments?
No question. There is, I think, amongst all of us on the council, universal agreement that Route 66 is a really underutilized asset. You have people from all around the world come to America to drive down Route 66, and right now they drive around Tulsa rather than through it. We can do better with Route 66, and I think we all agree with that.
Yeah, and it goes through quite a few districts.
Does go through quite a few districts, and mine being included in that. So I'm really looking forward to this.
Well, why should voters vote yes on all three of the propositions on April 5th, very quickly?
For me, I have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. And so for me, I've gone through this whole process thinking about, is this going to create the kind of Tulsa that when my kids are graduated from college and are thinking about where they're going to live, that it makes the kind of place they want to come back to? And the fact is, if this passes, you will have, for the first time in a generation, the correct number of police officers on our force. You'll have our streets being properly maintained. You'll have a transit system that allows any Tulsan to want to use the transit system. You'll have economic development proposals that make the Arkansas River, for the first time since the 50s, the kind of destination that people want to live by and recreate in. It will create that draw. You'll have safer streets for kids to go down. We didn't even get to talk about this today. This includes funding that will give our school districts here in Tulsa tools that no other school district in the state have to recruit teachers to Tulsa, which has a tremendous impact on education. I could go on for 10 minutes about the total impact of this and how it will make Tulsa better if it is approved. And not approving it just means that we continue to lose ground to other competitor cities that have woken up and have realized they have to do these types of things to get people to come to their community.
Counselors, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counselor Karen Gilbert from District 5 and Counselor G.T. Bynum of District 9 talking about Vision Tulsa, the $884 million sales tax proposal that will replace the original Vision 2025 proposal. It goes before city voters on April 5th. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.